From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now in Exile.
Oh, my God, Washington!
Her family died in this bombarding. Yeah, this is her house, and her husband and her son and family died in this bombarding. 8 people of her family died.
War. Today, a look back at the year with Free Speech Radio News and a roundtable of journalists who've been banned, fired, or exiled. Looking at 2001, we'll be joined by Chris Abrams of Democracy Now!, Jeremy Scahill from Belgrade, Yugoslavia, Bernard White and Robert Knight of WBAI, and Prothap Chatterjee in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. All that and more coming up. Welcome to the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting just blocks from the first Ground Zero. Afghanistan is the second. More than 100 Afghan civilians are reported to have been killed early yesterday morning when U.S. aircraft bombed a village in eastern Afghanistan. Villagers told reporters that one jet, a U.S. B-52 bomber, and 2 helicopters took part in the attack, saying up to more than 107 people had been killed, at least 10 wounded, an untold number of houses destroyed. Washington, in the meantime, has offered no official comment on the allegation. This latest report follows a rash of U.S. raids on alleged Taliban and al-Qaeda targets over the last few weeks that have left hundreds of civilians dead. On Saturday, U.S. bombs killed at least 15 civilians in eastern Paktia province, and earlier this month, U.S. warplanes attacked a convoy of vehicles in the same province and killed up to 60 people. Survivors said the convoy was carrying tribal leaders to the capital of Kabul for the swearing-in of Afghanistan's new interim government. Meanwhile, the country's interim cabinet sidestepped a potential hurdle in relations with Washington Sunday, saying the U.S. bombing campaign should continue for as long as it takes to wipe out so-called terrorists in Afghanistan. Suggestions last week that the time may be near for a bombing halt went down badly with the Pentagon and George Bush. Growing concern has been expressed in Afghanistan at heavy civilian casualties from the U.S. bombing. Meanwhile, an additional 50 British soldiers have moved into the Afghan capital as an agreement was finally reached over the role of an international peacekeeping force. The agreement had stalled over the weekend over the numbers and role of peacekeepers. British diplomatic and defense sources claim the collapse was due to a translation problem, but senior Afghan officials maintain the problem ran much deeper. According to diplomatic sources, some members of the new Afghan government want to limit the number of troops to no more than a few hundred inside Kabul, despite earlier promises that several thousand can enter. It's now expected, however, that up to 3,000 soldiers will make up the final number of peacekeepers. At some point, they could also operate outside Kabul, although a new mandate from the United Nations would be needed. 2 Indian soldiers were killed and 5 seriously injured last night during heavy mortar shelling between India and Pakistan over the disputed Kashmir border. At least 60,000 Indian villagers living near the border have fled their homes in the last 5 days. Meanwhile, it was confirmed today that Pakistan arrested a top militant accused by India of responsibility for the attack on the Indian parliament. Hafiz Saeed, who was until last week the leader of a militant group fighting India's rule in Kashmir, was arrested in Islamabad last night. India and Pakistan have fought 3 wars since gaining independence from Britain in 1947, twice over disputed Kashmir. The 2 countries are now both nuclear powers. Meanwhile, a fire in Lima, Peru, Saturday killed more than 260 people, many of them children. While the investigation continues, officials agree that inadequate zoning, street congestion, rampant safety violations contributed to the tragedy. An explosion in a fireworks store. People were buying fireworks for the new year. And another president has resigned in Argentina in less than a week. Rodriguez Sá assumed office just 1 week ago after former President Fernando de la Rúa was ousted from power amid anti-government protests and looting that left 26 people dead. His decision came a day after violent anti-government protests flared again in the streets of Buenos Aires, this time against his administration. During his week in office, Sá suspended payments on the country's foreign debt and announced new austerity measures. Sá's constitutionally prescribed successor, Ramón Puerta, the Senate president, refused to accept the job and resigned earlier this morning. The position, in turn, will be passed to the majority leader of the lower house, Eduardo Camaño. He said he was resigning immediately after failing to piece together a caretaker government with broader support. And on the home front, the first meeting of Pacifica's new National Board of Directors was convened on Saturday. Leslie Kagan, former dissident board member, well-known anti-war activist, was elected chair of the board. Resolutions dealing with the gag rule and the return of the fired and banned to New York station WBAI did not receive the required two-thirds majority and will go before a judge. The board did vote to return Democracy Now! To the airwaves of all Pacifica stations as soon as possible. Edwin Starr singing War here on the War and Peace Report on this last day of the year, 2001. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting just blocks from the first Ground Zero. Afghanistan is the second, blocks from where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood. We're going to turn first to the mix of the year in review, that has been produced by Jeff Brady of Free Speech Radio News, that includes excerpts of correspondence for Free Speech Radio News around the world over this past year. This is the year 2001 in review.
Under the tightest security restrictions ever during a presidential inauguration, 9 people were arrested.
Today is such a clear evidence that there's an aroused, passionate, very passionate and determined segment of the population in this country that knows what the ills are, has not been misled by all of the big business propaganda about how things will get solved.
Liberate, acknowledge me, or go to hell, another woman to rebel.
I don't want to vote no more.
What did you say?
Here is the house that should hold the bright sunlight of our democracy.
I think that that General Ashcroft will be General Ashcroft.
There is a record of real ideological extremism that concerns us, and that is paired with a record that suggests that he will not aggressively uphold civil rights, reproductive choice.
Peltier says he wishes he could change the past, but maintains his innocence.
I don't think in any kind of confrontation or any kind of war, I don't think anybody should lose their lives. But that happened, and I'm very, very sorry that it happened that day. You know, I did not kill those agents, nor do I know who did.
We were extremely disappointed and upset that we didn't even receive an official answer that he was being denied clemency.
Back at the U.S. Penitentiary in Leavenworth, Peltier gives a statement he'd want shared should he die in prison.
Just like my people to know that my only sin was I loved my people too much. I loved my culture too much, my religion. I'm so proud of being a Native American, of being an Indian person, that every time I think about it, it runs chills up my back.
The rolling blackout stretched from Bakersfield to the Oregon border, 500 miles away. Hundreds of thousands of people saw everything from their lights to their heaters to their computers and bank machines abruptly switch off.
We've just heard that Governor Davis met with Bill Bryson last night.
And who is Bill Bryson?
The head of Edison.
Oh, he can meet with the head of Edison.
Edison filed that they have $1.9 billion of cash on hand. These companies aren't going bankrupt. They're just playing a poker hand with the state of California, and so far, we're losing.
The only way to stop the bleeding of our money is to do something about the price of wholesale energy. We either got to have windfall profits tax, we got to have price caps, or we got to take them over.
Palestinians will witness the Israeli elections from what has been their prison for 50 years, with power cuts and not drinking water. At the eve of the elections, for both the Palestinians and the Israelis, it seems clear that war or peace will be made by the hawks, not the doves.
I wear this button. It's simple. It says, Amadou lives. But this button means we need to get rid of the 48-hour rule.
Remember Amadou. 41 shots, y'all. Unarmed man, y'all.
Get him out of come no closer. They said we can't come no closer than this.
All right, what's happening?
All right. See, all right, what's happening? What's
happening? As his supporters and loved ones cheered, Robert King Wilkerson walked out of the Louisiana State Penitentiary a free man. He had been incarcerated at the prison, also called Angola, for more than 29 years.
I mean, the mere fact that I'm released, I mean, you go back to what Martin Luther King said years and years ago, and I agree, justice delayed is justice denied.
Wilkerson is one of the prisoners known as the Angola Three. He joined the Black Panther Party in the New Orleans Parish Prison in 1970, where he gained notoriety among prison authorities for his outspoken resistance to horrendous prison conditions and his success in organizing other prisoners.
It's starting to fire rubber bullets from the right.
Once again, please, affinity groups, stick together and we just turned away a truck. Stick together, take care of yourself. Take out your contact lenses if you still have them. Vestidos on. Please wear these on. Al vivo, my home on the contact, si puedes abrir acá. Bonjour, Mr. Helicopter.
Mexican natives want a permanent role in the country's decision-making process.
Los pueblos indígenas han insistido.
Indigenous people have insisted that to get to the bottom of this issue, not just poverty, but the role of indigenous people in the kind of development they want, a fundamental change is needed between the Mexican state and these populations.
Si el templete donde estamos está donde está, no es accidente. Es porque de por sí, desde el principio, el gobierno está detrás de nosotros.
If the place we're standing is where it is not an accident. It is because from the beginning, the government has been at our backs, sometimes with armed helicopters, sometimes with paramilitaries, sometimes with bomber planes.
Del color de la tierra somos.
We are the color of the earth,
brown people. Our people's hour is dawning. It is an hour of dignity, an hour of a bridge that is also a window. It is the hour to see without embarrassment or fear. It is the hour to fight with our dignity, the color of the earth.
Chanting, "We won't give you Serbia," hundreds of supporters of Slobodan Milosevic rallied in front of Belgrade's central prison, where the former leader has been locked up on charges of economic corruption and abuse of power.
I would like the Serb people to understand why it is in their interests that they should comply with their international obligations, and why it is not in their interest to protect and to defend Mr. Milosevic. As I said, we want to help Yugoslavia.
Scores of youths took to the streets of Cincinnati this week, throwing stones, breaking windows, and assaulting motorists following Saturday's police killing of Timothy Thomas.
Whites have been targeted, whites have been pulled from their cars, whites have been beaten.
Thomas fled after police officer Stephen Roach attempted to arrest him for failing to appear in court. Roach pursued Thomas into an alley where the officer shot him dead.
It's not a black-white thing. It's really just a city problem that we have.
The Over the Rhine neighborhood where Thomas was killed erupted in rioting and looting, which has continued each night through the week.
We want to continue to pretend like we're one of the most livable cities in America, and we are not.
If you want to give a girl a morning after pill in a county clinic, you don't have to obtain permission from that parent.
Somehow the kids don't feel they can communicate with their parents. That's what's happening. That's the bottom line.
If you want to provide a student with let's say a 12-year-old girl with an aspirin, that 12-year-old girl must have parental permission.
But the general reaction to the election campaign has been yawns at best. Fortunately, the British electoral system allows only 1 month for campaigning.
Do you intend to vote in this general election that's coming up?
No.
Why not?
I'm too busy.
Do you intend to vote in a general election that's coming up?
No, not really.
Yeah. Why not?
Not really been following it, to be honest. I just haven't got time, you know? But basically, I'm not going to vote because I don't think it makes any difference.
Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott got into a brawl with a gasoline tax protester. On camera, Prescott was hit in the ear with an egg and instantly punched his assailant in the jaw.
It is not difficult to understand why many in the state, particularly blacks, think that in fact George W. Bush stole the presidential election in Florida.
What happened this year was that this Texas company, Checkpoint, was hired to develop this list of ex-felons so the purge could take place.
George W. Bush would have gained 6 votes on Al Gore if all the dimples and chads on 10,600 previously uncounted ballots in Miami-Dade County had been included.
Longtime maverick Republican James Jeffords of Vermont has the White House holding its breath for another day as he contemplates defecting from the GOP.
This is the most dramatic shift in control of a congressional body. If Jeffords leaves the Republican caucus, either to become a Democrat or an independent, what that translates to is Democrats in charge of all the committees, Democrats in charge of the flow of legislation.
Armed guards patrolled parking lots and stood outside of the federal courtroom in Ocala, Florida yesterday as abortion provider James Scott Pendergraft and his associate Michael Spivogel awaited sentencing.
Abortion providers across this country always have to pressure, always have to get rights to buffer zones around their clinics from anti-abortionists. And this case sets the terms that if they ever try to stop that violence against them, that they in turn will become criminally prosecuted.
When the curtain passed the media center, Mr. McVeigh seemed to look up and intentionally make eye contact with each of us.
Tim has a good mind. He likes to talk about issues and things. And he's also a sensitive person. That seems strange, I'm sure, to a lot of people, but he's a sensitive person. And I just see in Tim a goodness that most people do not see.
My emotions was it was just a big relief.
just a big sigh come over my body and just felt real good, sir.
We were happy.
I'm elated.
I am the master of my faith. I am the captain of my soul.
I know Juan Garza as well, and I've talked to him. Juan Garza's execution will be, it'll be a ripple in a great wave. The great wave is Tim's, all the media's on Tim, and Juan Garza's will just be a few days after that, and probably he'll get a line in the newspaper that he was executed.
I support the death penalty. I don't think we use it enough, in my opinion, not just in this case, but in any case.
You're listening to the War and Peace Report, the Year in Review by Free Speech Radio News. And we'll be back with that in a minute, and then a roundtable of banned and fired producers talking about this monumental year. Stay with us. To the teeth. Annie DeFranco here on the War and Peace Report as we look back at the year 2001 with Free Speech Radio News producer Jeff Brady.
Vieques, Puerto Rico is the sort of sleepy, lush, tropical island that people in the U.S. dream about all winter long.
With the technologies that we have today, no one can tell me that they have to do bombing on an island. And that saves lives. That insults people's intelligence when you stand there and tell them that, and they look you dead in the face like it's the truth. It's like I say, it's sad.
It's home to some of the Caribbean's finest secluded beaches, and there's even a bioluminescent bay.
It's a terrible injustice that's been going on for 61 years. The bombardment of American soil inhabited by American citizens is an outrage.
The deep coral reefs that surround the island attract divers from around the world.
Our government is taking advantage of people everywhere, and this is just one instance, and I'm glad that it's going where it is, and I'm glad Hillary Clinton is right behind us with the pictures right in front of us.
I'm against it. It should stop.
Horses roam free, tropical birds are everywhere, and the trade winds, they feel like a kiss.
Russia is not the enemy of the United States. Two, the Cold War is over. And the mentality that used to grip our two nations during the Cold War must end.
Greenpeace is opposed to both missile defense and the U.S. withdrawal from the Kyoto Treaty.
If you look at the backing of Bush originally, defense industry, oil industry, automotive industry are the three forces that really put him where he is and funded him more than anyone else. So both Kyoto and Star Wars are then what could be expected.
There are resolutions we all know are standing at the United Nations that calls on Israel to stop violating international law and the Geneva Convention. And it's time that they put pressure on Israel to do so.
I believe we need to work together to reduce greenhouse gases, but I refuse to accept a treaty that will harm our country's economy.
The Union intends to proceed without the United States if necessary.
The stated mandates in the Kyoto Treaty
would affect our economy in a negative way.
The world's largest producer of carbon emissions has forsaken the treaty. Greenpeace International mailed letters to the top 100 U.S. Fortune 500 companies requesting they make their positions clear on the Kyoto Treaty and President Bush's actions.
I'm confident the people of the leadership of Europe are interested in our opinions, and I'm confident we'll have a good and constructive dialogue.
Japan's Environment Minister Yuriko Kawaguchi announced at a press conference today that Japan supports going forward with the Kyoto Protocol, but will continue to work to convince the U.S. to rejoin the effort.
Demonstrations began in at least seven separate locations around the city today as tens of thousands of protesters met together to send their message to the G8 using a variety of tactics.
Riot police in Genoa shot a peaceful demonstrator in the head this afternoon. The protester was one of tens of thousands of demonstrators opposed to the G8 who took to the streets of Genoa.
There are some who will try to disrupt the meetings, claiming they represent the poor. To those folks, I say, instead of embracing policies that represent the poor, you embrace policies that lock poor people into poverty.
There are tanks and there are hundreds of carabinieri, hundreds of them, all their gas tanks on. And you don't really understand what's the reason for doing it, because they threw the gas stuff inside the place where the people were eating and they were drinking and they were just having a quiet time, and they started invading like with this gas stuff all the places, and all the people just went away from there.
I am about 70 feet up in a red oak tree here in Bloomington, Indiana. They actually didn't come in until about 4:30 yesterday with bulldozers, and then they had a cherry picker or whatever, some kind of scaffolding thing. And there were four of us up in the trees. They got three of us down. They couldn't get me because I climbed higher in the tree, and they couldn't go up as high as I was.
Moss was the last to descend from a stand of endangered trees into the hands of police this weekend. He was the 15th person arrested, ending a four-month protest against Bloomington, Indiana's sprawling development.
We're losing this green space so quickly around the city's boundaries and within the city. The city's becoming more and more treeless all the time with all these. They cut down all the big ones and they put in these little, you know, five-year-old trees.
I am disgusted because if America's going to try to take a high ground and say, because this conference is not being fair, we're pulling out, where were they when the conference was being unfair to indigenous people? Where were they in the injustice of apartheid? Where were they in the justice against African Americans? And so it's kind of convenient for them to decide when they will stand up for justice, and we cannot have a convenient democracy.
This sequence of the two extraordinarily bright orange explosions, the astonishing covering of the entire bottom of Manhattan.
We have just learned that the White House has been evacuated, but there is basically a nationwide terrorist alert.
Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts.
Oh, this is on the right-hand side. Yeah, oh my gosh, the entire building, it looks like the side of the building has collapsed.
Our military at home and around the world is on high alert status.
Europe, too, seems to be reeling from the impact of the multiple terror strikes in the United States.
Their barbarism will stand as their shame for all eternity.
Oh my gosh, this is horrific. Absolutely horrific. How could that have happened?
This will be a monumental struggle of good versus evil, but good will prevail.
I think it's like this century's version of hippies. I mean, not the whole drug acid craze, but like, you know, all I see is a bunch of people getting together and just saying, peace, man, let's do nothing. And I don't think that's exactly right.
War isn't the option, it's the only option.
People's anger is understandable. We all feel it. I think everybody here feels angry, too.
It was a mix of emotions that hit the workers when Boeing made the announcement. Initially, they were skeptical that it was necessary to lay off 30,000 employees.
America is resolved to rout out terrorism, to make sure that legitimate governments can survive as we head into the 21st century, and to make a strong stand for freedom.
The Taliban is reported to be in the process of mobilizing some 300,000 men to defend against impending U.S. attacks on Afghanistan.
You don't see terrorists coming from Scandinavia. You don't see them coming from prosperous countries with equity, with democratic processes. They are bred by millions and millions of starving, brutalized people.
Three children were reported killed in overnight bombings, two of them sisters. They now join the estimated hundreds of civilians killed by Washington's attacks over the last 3 weeks.
Oh, my God, Washington!
Her family died in this bombing. Yeah, this is her house, and her husband and her son and family died in this bombing. 8 people of her family died.
Late Sunday night, Haider Rizvi, an international journalist of Pakistani heritage and a resident of Brooklyn's Park Slope community, was beaten, kicked, and rendered unconscious and toothless at her neighborhood store by 3 men who claimed he looked like Osama bin Laden.
Sometime on the afternoon of the 11th of September, he was put in segregation with nothing.
Attorneys of record have not been able to be in touch with their clients.
Is this since September 11th?
Yes. People who have been flagged by the Bureau of Prisons and by the Department of Justice as political activists.
This new law that I signed today will allow surveillance of all communications used by terrorists, including emails, the internet, and cell phones.
Do you know a terrorist? The United States government is offering rewards of up to $25 million for information that prevents an international terrorist act against U.S. persons or property. Information about suspicious activities involving aircraft, about stolen explosives or biological materials, about letters or packages.
For information about the symptoms and transmission of anthrax, press 2. To hear more about the investigation of anthrax in New York City, press 3.
I'm a freelance press photographer of Queens. I pulled up on a beach, 129th Street, by the Texaco station, where a large piece of the aircraft landed on the Texaco station. The father and the two sons of the owners of the Texaco station were putting out the fire with a small hose from the gas station.
We did good. Michael Bloomberg did a lot better, and I congratulate him, and we all should.
This man just literally bought the mayoralty. He has no experience.
I'd like to thank the secret weapon that we really had. People talk about the money in this campaign, but what made us different was 5,000 volunteers.
2 dozen peace activists and people of faith, including several friends and relatives of victims of the September 11th attacks, are in the midst of a week-long march from Washington, D.C. to New York City.
The greatest honor to my brother's life would be that his death would mark the end of a vicious cycle of violence. I hope that something good could come from something so terrible. This hope slowly disintegrated day by day as I heard the vengeful words of our leaders. When the bombs started falling, I felt like my brother would be just another casualty in a cycle of violence.
We do care about what happened on September 11th. Care very much, but violence isn't the answer.
There has to be a fair amount of women in writing the constitution for Afghanistan. This is essential. Otherwise, we still would have the warlord society.
I was dreaming, in my dreaming, well of an aspect bright and fair. And my sleeping, it was broken, but my dream, it lingered near. In the farm of shining valleys, where the pure air recognized.
Jeremy.
And my senses newly open, cause I awaken.
Patti Smith. And that wraps up Free Speech Radio News's look back at the year 2001. It was produced by Jeff Brady. And you are listening to the War and Peace Report as I'm joined by my colleagues from around the country and the world to talk about this year. on the telephone with us right now is Prothap Chatterjee. He's a producer at KPFA, longtime independent reporter. He's just spent a number of weeks in India, his home, and has moved on to Tashkent, Uzbekistan. India right now is a very serious situation, the situation between India and Pakistan. Why don't we start right there, and then we'll work our way back with Prothap. Welcome to the War and Peace Report.
Thank you, Amy.
It's good to have you with
us. Well, the situation, as some of your listeners may know, is that India and Pakistan are now on the brink of possible war. And India and Pakistan, my father's family is from India, and over the last several decades, there have been two wars with Pakistan, one war with Pakistan over Bangladesh, when the country of Pakistan was split into two, and I actually spent a week in Bangladesh on my way here to Uzbekistan. And there's been, on December 13th, a number of suspected Islamic militants supposedly originating from Pakistan stormed the Indian parliament, and with the intention of capturing members of parliament. They were, unfortunately for themselves, I guess, didn't make it to the center of parliament, but were killed on the way, but not before they had killed another six guards. And India has taken the position, I guess, that the United States has taken in the destruction of the World Trade Center, that since these assailants were supposedly trained in Pakistan, they have the right to go to war with Pakistan. And right now, thousands of troops are massing on the border, with the intention of perhaps calling Pakistan's bluff if Pakistan doesn't surrender the people from these two Islamic militant groups. And Pakistan is kind of in a bind because they've sent a number of troops to the border with Afghanistan, and they really don't. So they're looking for help from the United States, whereas India, a nuclear power just like Pakistan, you know, could well be threatening to create havoc in Pakistan. So this is the situation we're in right now. They're supposed to be going to mediation in Nepal. The British Prime Minister is due pretty soon. But it looks closer to war than it has had for many years.
And you're in Uzbekistan now. Very briefly, why you're there and how Uzbekistan fits into the scenario there with Afghanistan and the U.S. bombing that continues. The latest news we've heard is the bombing of more than 100, killing of more than 100 civilians in an eastern Afghanistan city.
Indeed. The reason I'm in Uzbekistan is principally to go to Afghanistan. I tried to go to Pakistan, but as I said, I'm half Indian, and therefore the Pakistanis won't let me into the country, and I tried for 2 months to go there with no luck. So I'm now in Uzbekistan, in Tashkent, which is the capital. And Uzbekistan, for people who may not know the region, is just north of Afghanistan. There are three countries, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, which border the north. And like Afghanistan, they have large Islamic populations, but they also share heritage from the Soviet Union. And each of the three countries are ruled by former communist bosses. Here in Uzbekistan, the country is ruled by Islam Karimov, who was formerly the communist boss here. And they rule with an iron fist. Just in the literally the last 2 years, 7,000 people have been taken, have been imprisoned for mostly for being Islamic, members of Islamic parties that dared to oppose Karimov and his rule. So the U.S. has found very useful allies out here. And Uzbekistan is actually the first place that the United States, together with Pakistan, stationed troops for the war in Afghanistan over the last 3 months. In the hotel I'm staying right now, in fact, they are U.S. military, and they've been here for several months since September 11th, waiting and advising. There's a base a few hundred miles north of the border with Afghanistan in a place called Khanabad, where infantry have been deployed, and those infantry have been making regular trips into Afghanistan. This, some of your listeners may be familiar with the town Mazar-e-Sharif, and that's literally 60 miles from the border once you cross at Termez at the Friendship Bridge, and that is where I intend to go. That is also the place that the Taliban first fell to the U.S. bombing. But it's also a scene of major human rights abuses. I think it was in November, so the U.S. bombed a prison where the Taliban staged an uprising. So my intention is to go down there and I'm spending a month here in Uzbekistan and hopefully in Afghanistan investigating some of this.
Prothap, we have to break for stations to identify themselves, and then we'll go to our roundtable here in the studio at the firehouse just blocks from Ground Zero, the first Ground Zero, Afghanistan, as Prothap was describing the second. You're listening to the War and Peace Report, back in a minute.
Are we really gonna sleep through another century while the rich profit off our blood? And traveler, it may take some doing to see this earth undoing through. But in my own opinion, here's what I suggest we do. Open fire on Hollywood. Open fire on MTV. Open fire on NBC, CBS, and ABC. Oh, oh, open fire.
To the teeth, Annie DeFranco here on the War and Peace Report. Refugee Radio. I'm Amy Goodman, joined by my colleagues Robert Knight and Bernard White of WBAI. Bernard, the fired program director, hopefully will be returning soon with all the band and the fire to WBAI. Robert Knight as well, my colleague on Wake Up Call with Bernard White, and the news anchor of Wake Up Call, currently the news anchor for Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, her daily on Pacifica Station KPFA, and flashpoints.net. Jeremy Scahill also joins us in the studio. We're used to talking to him on the telephone from Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Jeremy's back. He's going to be producing with Democracy Now! For a little while. You know, when we go back to 9/11 this year, it's hard to remember what happened before, but there is so much. I mean, we heard in that very good mix that Jeff Brady did, oh, don't forget Leonard Peltier was denied executive clemency. Of course, the Diallo trial and other stories. But Jeremy, you were in Belgrade, 9/11, and you wrote a very moving piece that appeared on Common Dreams.
Well, one of the things that I've learned over the past couple of years living in Belgrade is that people who have been bombed, like the people of Yugoslavia have been, people who have been attacked by the United States, have an extraordinary sympathy with all victims of bombings. And so one would assume that the people of Yugoslavia were attacked by the United States. And so seeing the World Trade Center go down on TV, which everyone did all over the world, that they would have somehow rejoiced in that. And I think that, that was what a lot of the media were looking for from places like Yugoslavia, Palestine, looking for footage to show on TV to say, ha, look, the rest of the world is rejoicing in this. And this is a reason why the Bush administration should respond with massive military force. But actually, I was at a funeral with people who were grieving the loss of their father or their brother. And I got a phone call from a journalist in Yugoslavia who said, your country's in complete disarray. And at first, I thought that Bush had been shot. By the way that she was talking, and she said, no, it's much, much worse than that. She said the World Trade Center has been bombed, and that was all I knew at that point. And these people who were at a funeral rushed to get me to a house where I could see satellite TV, because it's sort of rare. I was in a rural part of Yugoslavia, and they got me to a satellite TV, and I saw the second plane hit the World Trade Center. And, you know, and I returned to this scene at this funeral, and I thought, you know, I was almost apprehensive to tell people about what was happening because they were at a funeral. And yet they all went out of their way to comfort me as an American because of something that had happened in my country. And yet these were people that had cluster bombs dropped in their country for 78 days by the United States. These were people that had hundreds and hundreds of their civilians, their children killed. When NATO was bombing their electrical supplies, that meant that incubators in neonatal hospitals went out and children died from lack of electricity. And yet their initial reaction was sympathy for the victims.
Robert Knight, where were you? Although I do know, as we talked at 911 from the firehouse, as you were watching the planes go into the World Trade Center.
I was in an elevated location just south of the United Nations with a wide field of view, and I saw the first plane, the one piloted by Mohammed Atta, fly southbound in Manhattan, approximately over Fifth Avenue or so. Too low, too loud. It proceeded within the next minute to crash into the North Tower. And throughout the day, stunned, I watched and reported on the burning, the collapse, the falling, and the too few ambulances that came northbound afterwards.
We are also joined by Chris Abrams, a producer of Democracy Now!, who was not here on 911 producing the program from New York. Instead was in Durban, South Africa, producing Democracy Now! It was right after the UN conference against racism. And she was bringing us the voices of the Dalits of India, the voices of those who were fighting for reparations around the world. And then this happened. Chris, you've got a newspaper in front of you.
I do. It's the Sowetan Daily. It's South Africa's biggest daily. It's based out of Soweto, which is short for the southwestern townships of Johannesburg. It's where all of the black Africans were forcibly removed and forced to live during apartheid. They were not allowed to live in the city. No one knows how many people live in Soweto. They can't keep track. It's composed of shacks made of aluminum siding all the way up to upper-class houses there. But it's the only paper I found. I racked the papers on September 12th. And instead of what most papers did, which had huge blow-up pictures of the trade centers being bombed or falling, the shot is backed up a little bit, and it's in black and white. But the headline in huge letters is it World War? They anticipated what would happen. And I also, it was interesting being in South Africa when it happened, because I have a lot of friends there who were extremely sympathetic and offered their condolences. I identify with what Jeremy was saying. Despite, you know, the U.S. so much that the United States government had done to the South African people, Reagan supporting apartheid and so on. But they said that they weren't surprised, that they weren't surprised that this would happen because of the imperialism of the United States. And it was also interesting, it happened just days after the U.S. pulled out of the Durban conference, the conference against racism. To everyone's shock and horror that the U.S. would be so brash as to and so blatant to say that this doesn't matter. And everyone on the ground knew that it was not over the Israel controversy at the conference. It was actually because the U.S. didn't want to deal with reparations, with its legacy of colonialism, and that was reported in the local papers, that all of the delegates knew that. I don't think it was reported over here. But the two incidents remained linked in my mind. As I was watching the towers fall down on CNN, I was reminded of the actual day the U.S. pulled out, when the NGO leaders, the U.S. activists, were so upset, so enraged, that they got together right as it was happening and marched to the steps of the convention center to protest. Leaders from all over the world, activist leaders and government delegates, lined up along the path of the marchers in support and raised their fists in the air, and everyone was chanting, "Stop U.S. racism," all over the world.
I wanted to say that September 11th obliterated the news of the UN conference against racism, but the news media succeeded in doing that themselves even before 911. It hardly got any coverage in the United States. I believe we're the only national daily broadcast broadcasting from Durban, South Africa. Bernard White, where were you on September 11th?
Well, I was headed to an assignment. I was working at the State University of New York at Old Westbury, and I got an opportunity to also stop at an elevation point where I could see, had a clear line of vision to the towers. And I saw the smoke coming out, and I got back in the car, and I was driving off to the school, and I heard that the second plane had hit. By the time I got to school, I remember listening to the broadcast and hearing a lot of cursing in the background, and then, you know, the announcer saying that the towers had collapsed. And I couldn't believe it. I've been in the World Trade Center on several occasions, been up all the way up to the top, and I couldn't imagine this happening. I thought that it was just an exaggeration. I could see where maybe the top part of the building would have fallen because of the impact, but I had to rush to the school to get to a television so I could see, and it's still very difficult to believe that those buildings are no longer there.
Amy, if I may add an observation on the dominance of the World Trade Center attack in terms of the stories of the year, certainly, and properly so, it has concentrated and focused media attention. But I believe that one of the true stories of the year 2001 is how simultaneously the media has been taken further away from information and public service. In the reactionary attack on Afghanistan, some would say retaliatory and so on, we've seen a number of deprivations of information for the public and journalists like ourselves. For one example, the Pentagon has purchased all of the satellite imagery from space imaging, so Jeremy and the rest of us cannot report on the actual damage that has been done by some of the heaviest bombing in the history of the planet. Earlier this year, at the beginning of the year 2001, the Pentagon also purchased the services of the Iridium satellite system, which is a global satellite system for cell phones. And that was very instrumental in all of the targeting that was done by many of the Northern Alliance, United Front, or whatever you call the indigenous warlord allies of the United States in Afghanistan. Also, the concept of communicating on the internet has been moved from the public domain to that of government, law enforcement, and intelligence. The Patriot Act requiring, on the word of a prosecutor, not even a court order, the turning over of one's browsing history if the prosecutor says that it's a matter of terrorism. The FBI's carnivore program to take over the bottlenecks and backbones of internet communications and to snoop email. They have a new project called Magic Lantern, which is a Trojan horse which can be implanted by opening an email virus on one's computer, which records keystrokes and can look at data files and surreptitiously send them back to law enforcement or intelligence headquarters.
And Robert, on that Norton antivirus, actually, on all of these things that the FBI, these viruses that the FBI is creating and sending out to people to use to conduct illegal
Jeremy
surveillance against citizens, Norton antivirus has reportedly made it so that their program will not pick up these viruses, that they made an agreement with the FBI that they will not update their software to pick up those viruses. And so there is a movement going on, mainly on the internet, to get people to stop using Norton antivirus because the belief is that it will not protect you from FBI surveillance.
We have more media but less privacy, and in fact now the government is taking over more dominance in that area than even Microsoft.
One of the things that Jeremy was saying that just struck a chord with me is about sympathy for the victims, how in areas where there have been bombings, there's sympathy for the victims. And it was just amazing looking at the coverage over the last couple of months that the U.S. still has not developed any sympathy for the Palestinians and how they have been bombed, and it's ongoing bombing, and yet the media has projected it where they have not gotten the U.S. to have sympathy for the bombings of the Palestinians, or even for the children and elderly in Afghanistan that have been bombed as so-called collateral damage.
I refer people to our website, democracynow.org. It's still with the exclusive of University of New Hampshire Professor Mark Herold, who's been counting since October 7th the number of people dead, more than 4,000, perhaps more than 5,000 daily, analyzing reports from around the world to try to come up with that figure. The only newspaper in the world that has picked up that report was The Guardian in England, no mainstream newspaper in the United States, yet they offer no figures themselves.
The
Robert Knight.
Another story developing, which will be a story for not only 2001, but for possibly decades to come, is the remnant cluster bombs in Afghanistan. There were a quarter of a million bomblets, submunitions they call them, dropped, and 25, 30,000, who knows how many of them, statistically approximately that many, are left unexploded with the same image. as the lethal food packages that were part of the humanitarian annihilation of many of the areas of Afghanistan. And I would also add to, Bernard was speaking of sympathy, I would add to the stories of the year the publication by Jim Bamford of Operation Northwoods, which was a 1960 Joint Chiefs of Staff plan to fabricate an event, a terrorist event, the crashing of an airplane, the attack on a military base, the loss of life, the naming of names of purported victims in a fabricated incident to provoke a war with Cuba. And there are many obvious parallels to be drawn with the way that the media has been used in
Bernard,
recent events.
Last comment, when we talk about news that gets obliterated and then treaties as well.
Yeah, well, we had the ABM. It seems that the white man still speaks with forked tongue. He makes treaties and then breaks them. You had the ABM treaty, which is going to, we see already India, Pakistan, and it's also going to have an impact on China. This is going to start another arms race. We can look forward to that. And millions of U.S. tax dollars are going to go to support it.
Well, on that note, I want to thank everyone for being with us. These are simply the launching points of a conversation that we will continue to have into the new year as we get used to saying 2002. And we look back on this year that a man who was not popularly elected president declared war on the world. Jeremy Scahill, Bernard White, Robert Knight, Chris Abrams, thank you so much. Lizzie Ratner, also our producer. Chris is tripling as engineer and producer today. I want to dedicate today's program and this year to the band and the fired and those in exile, particularly at WBAI, our station, and hope very soon that we'll be sitting together at that station in New York. It is absolutely critical to have an independent media in these critical times. Democracy Now! In Exile, produced by Lizzie Ratner, Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, Brad Simpson, Anthony Sloan, usually our engineer. Very special thanks to KPFA and KFCF, who made it possible for Democracy Now! To broadcast around the country, even though we're off the airwaves of the other stations. With a new board meeting we will be having in New York, there will be one on January 11th. We'll all be attending. We'll put out the details as soon as we get them. And hopefully we'll be back all on the air very soon. Democracy Now! In Exile is still here at the Firehouse and in exile from the studios of the Band and the Fire, the studios of our listeners. Thank you to Manhattan Neighborhood Network. Thank you to Free Speech TV. Thank you to Downtown Community Television. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.